This is a reading from the book of Mark, chapter 2, verses 23-27. One Sabbath, he was going through the cornfields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need of food? He entered the house of God when Abiathar was high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and he gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for humankind, and not humankind for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath.'" This is the word of the Lord.
Hello. My name is Deanna Lee, and I'm a member here at Church Without Walls, and I'm kind of taller than this right now. And I was asked to be tonight's opening act and share some reflections on rest. And if you notice the bags underneath my eyes, like, I'm not very good at this. So here are three reflections on my attempts and experiences with rest. Number one, lack of rest can unknowingly disable us. Now, I haven't done this in recent Lents, but there were several years where one of my Lenten disciplines was to have no TV or internet after 10, which to some you're like, you know, but I'm a night owl, and, you know, there's a way that TV and computer stuff, you know, is just like very welcome distractions, and in that time, I wanted to curb those. And I remember one of those years, it was maybe a couple weeks into Lent, I was sitting at my desk at work, and I remember distinctly having this feeling as if something, like a cloud, had just lifted. And all of a sudden, I realized, like, I feel pretty good. And where I often would and can feel cranky or kind of ambivalent about work, I realized in that moment something had changed, like that feeling was gone. And it didn't take me too long to realize, like, this wasn't like this huge spiritual awakening, it was just that I was getting enough sleep. And it's not unlike, you know, there's often kids that you see and they're misbehaving, and sometimes, you know, might think like, oh, they're just misbehaving types of children, but I realized, like, we're not unlike children. We need sleep or else we're cranky and prone to throw tantrums. So I think when we get enough rest, we can be very different people and more close to the people that God intends us to be. So that's number one. Number two, not working is not the same as rest. So, like, not working is not equal to rest. I'm someone who can kind of take some pride in how I choose rest. Even in college, I made a conscious effort not to be like a workaholic. I like to be productive. And so if I feel like I'm kind of spinning my wheels, I'll just, like, I need to take a break, and I'll just do that. But more often than not, I'll say that oftentimes when I would study in college, I would actually start my study session by taking a nap, because I knew that once I start reading, I'm going to fall asleep anyway, so I'll just sleep first. It's more efficient this way. So even today, as a working adult, I can work long hours in a day, and I'll try to stop and pick things up later when I feel like I'm in a better place. And, you know, that's in the small scale, and even in the big scale, taking vacations is always a good thing for the work-life balance. But inevitably, these breaks entail, like, some type of entertainment, right? Something you enjoy, like watching TV or movies, or for those of you who are into Lumosity and brain training games, like, that's something I'm very dedicated to. Certainly, that does provide some type of rest and reprieve from work. But I've come to find that often I treat those non-working activities as if they were the equivalent of rest. And there's certainly things that I enjoy. And watching TV can be restful. But the reality is that and maybe you can relate to this, is that when restful activities keep me up until midnight or 1:30, and they mean that I get like 6 hours of sleep instead of eight, they're not so restful in the end. So not working is not the same as rest. And last but not least, I think rest can be a very hard choice to make. And I'm sure this will be the one thing you'll remember from what I say up here. I say this with some sense of shame and some sense of pride. But last weekend, I was in my pajamas until 3 p.m. on Saturday and on Sunday. I don't think Rena knew this when she asked me to do this. And now this totally wasn't planned. But that's like just the thing. Like, I didn't plan it, and that's why it was actually a very restful weekend. And as someone who plans and schedules things, and, you know, I'm a rather social person, I tend to just, I say yes to things. If I'm free, I'll say yes. And I realize that that can actually unintentionally lead to a lack of rest. And so even last weekend, I had, you know, different things I had to do, but I just had a lot of space to do them. I took a slower pace and just found that there was more time for me to enjoy what I was doing, just being more present and mindful of how I'm doing and the things that God is doing in my life. And I find that the most kind of profound times I've had in connecting with Jesus have been in places of just stillness, where I've gone to our back deck and just sat there for, you know, an hour and just like have this sense of peace and just a way of just receiving from God that doesn't have to do with being in movement or doing things. So anyway, those are my three reflections, and hopefully that is in line with what Gary's going to say. Thanks.
I repudiate everything she just said. Just kidding. No, I actually love the pre-study nap. Just like that's a great strategy. So I want to start actually by sharing a book with you that I have fallen asleep to many times. But seriously, this is a book I really feel like it's changed my life, and I apologize in advance that it may find its way into sermon illustrations from time to time moving forward. But it's helpful for me. It's, in some ways, it's asking one of the profoundest questions I can imagine, and that is, why is it that in Western civilization, like 500 years ago, you couldn't help but ask the question, you couldn't ask the question, is there a God? 500 years ago, everybody agrees there's a God. It wouldn't even really make sense. There's no way you could publicly go around saying that. And so this book looks at what has happened in the last 500 years in the West so that now nobody can avoid that question, is there a God? Even if you're a very strong believer, even if you're like, God is my everything, and you're a super Pentecostal and you're really into it, you know that a lot of people do not believe in God. Right? And so what Taylor talks about is it kind of fragilizes your belief, right? You believe strongly, but you know, like, other people don't. What's up with that? And if you're like a Richard Dawkins loving, you know, all people who are religious are all idiots, yet you know there's some smart people out there that kind of believe this stuff. What's up with that? You know, there's like these questions. How did all this change happen? What is it like to live in a secular age now? And so this is a powerful book for me in a lot of senses, but one way is how he talks about how time has changed over the last 500 years. And so if you were a person and say you lived in England in 1540 or something like that, say in the medieval era, in a sense, time was holy to you. What Taylor talks about is time is actually chaotic, right? Not erotic, chaotic. Important difference. Chaotic actually means that you see time as like spiritual and holy, and there are times in the calendar that actually are holy. It's not that you decided to celebrate something holy that day. That day is holy. Did you know that Christians used to fight and like totally divorce one from another because they disagreed on the date of Easter? I'd be like, what's wrong with these intolerant Christians? It makes no sense, right? Like, you think it's 1 week later, and so we're never going to speak to each other ever again. Like, come on. But that was true. And why was that? It was because for them, when the day of Easter comes, that's not arbitrary. You're in some kind of mystical spiritual sense, you're actually participating in the original Easterness of Easter, right? Those days happen. And so that for, you know, European Christendom, their calendars look something like this, right? Their rhythms, their weekly, their monthly rhythms were filled up with like festivals and holidays and church calendar days and Lent and Advent and Saint Whoever's Day and Saint Whoever's Day and all these days. They actually added up to almost 5 months of the year with some kind of holy day, which if you're a Christian, that's like a rhythm for you, right? You don't work those days. You do worship in this day. You do remember this saint. And if you're not a Christian, it's a really great day to get hammered and not have to work. Right? So it's a rhythm for everybody, and it's, you know, all-inclusive. It's a good thing, right? What's striking, though, is that after the Industrial Revolution, they got rid of all this stuff, and there was a new logic, right? There was a logic then of the machine, and the machine in the factory, that runs 24/7. So then what happened to people's work lives? It wasn't, people's work lives were no longer 5 months a year. Now it's the owners of those factories want people to work as much as possible, right? So commonly, during the Industrial Revolution, your work week could be 70, 100 hours. That's a work week for you because it's the logic of the machine. And then by the mid-19th century, like, labor starts to push back and say, that's crazy. But again, it's the market kind of determining people's work-life rhythms. And so what you get now is something like this. It's what we've gone from this to this. It's what this, I had to go to November to find an empty month in my calendar because I didn't want to show you all what I'm doing. So, you know, this is what Walter Benjamin calls homogeneous empty time, right? No longer are there holy days in which we are called to worship or called to remember. Now it's a blank calendar and we can put whatever we want whenever we want. And it's a blank slate and everything is equal. And that's the world that we live in now. And so now we have conversations. Now we've invented things like the word leisure. That's a new word, right? Because used to be everybody's working all the time. Well, now we need a word for leisure time. And we've invented things like work-life balance. We have a whole new vocabulary. We have words that have really come up like stress. Now, this could just be nomenclature, but in 1800, in written material in English, nobody was talking about stress, and now everybody's talking about stress all the time, right? We've invented words like burnout. Apparently, burnout is going down a little bit, but, you know, as of 1980, I don't know, maybe it's something about Reagan, you know, like everybody's burning out. It's a different world. We're managing our time. We're responding to it differently. We have different words. We have different rhythms that are fully determined by homogeneous empty time. So my question for all of you tonight is, does God have something to say to us about our weekly, about our monthly rhythms? Is there a way that we can recover that which is holy, that which is sacred, that which is spiritual in the way we live our lives? Or is it just like, well, I go to church on Sunday, it's all good? Or is there something that where God is, Jesus is the Lord of kind of all of our time and that very rhythm itself? So we're in the middle of a sermon series where we've been talking actually about rest and about prayer and silence and solitude, all these spiritual things. And so far, I think we've really been talking about daily rhythms, right? Like, how do I, you know, go to work and then how do I have some time of prayer? How am I really active, but then I have some time of contemplation? How am I like talking to everybody and then I have some silence, right? And a daily kind of rhythm. But now we're actually talking about that on a weekly rhythm. And so the question is, what does the scripture tell us about this? Is there something in the Bible which makes sense? And as we've read, we hear that Jesus does address that. So let me quickly, before we go back to the scripture, let me give you a little context for this passage. In this passage, Jesus is talking about the Sabbath, one Sabbath. Now, what is that? Well, let me tell you, this is what the Sabbath is. The Sabbath is one of the Ten Commandments. And this, you know, one of the foundations of the Jewish religion, one of the foundations of Western Christianity, Western society. And so this is one of the commandments that was most important. And in the Ten Commandments, it says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh is the holy to the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughters, your manservants, your maidservants, your ox or your ass, your cattle, or the sojourner who is within your gates. Now, if you're a younger person, if you're like a middle school person, the reason I could recite that is because I had to listen to that every week growing up. And it really struck, like, the pastor said ox or ass. It means donkey, all right? I'm not, you know. But it's interesting, like, you know, you're maybe, like, younger. Not all this doesn't make sense, but stuff gets into your head, and there's a lot there. So I just want to encourage you. Church was very boring for me growing up, but sometimes stuff gets in and it makes sense. And so I realized somehow I memorized this thing about Sabbath. And there's some kind of, I think, ancient wisdom that is for us, that Jesus is kind of drawing on here. And so Jesus is a Jewish rabbi. Jesus is speaking as a Jewish leader, and he's talking about what should Sabbath look like for those that want to follow Jesus, people like us. And so Sabbath is this time. It's actually quite simple. On Sabbath, you don't work and you do rest. That's it. Sermon over. Don't work, do rest. But it's deeply rooted in things like creation, because the Ten Commandments go on to say, because it was God, like when God made the whole world, he made it all, he did all this work, and then he rested on the seventh day. That's amazing. And so there's a way in which Sabbath is echoing God's own character, God's own rhythm, God's self. We echo that. So it's rooted in creation. It's also rooted in community, because for the Jewish people, doing Sabbath was something nobody around them did. Right? So people looked at them and they're like, yeah, there's those crazy Jews, like they're just sitting around today. It's their Sabbath or something. Right? So it's a community thing. They all did it together. So it's rooted in community as well. Sabbath is also rooted in justice. Because remember that list that in the commandment? Like, you shouldn't work on the Sabbath, but also your kids shouldn't work on Sabbath. No child labor, right? But also your animals shouldn't even work on Sabbath. And also the sojourner who is in your gate. No immigrant workers on your Sabbath. Your manservant and your maidservant, meaning the low-income, the minimum wage workers, the people who get paid on the under the table, who are most easily exploited in our society, they get a day off too. This was revolutionary in the ancient Near East. Nobody cares about them. They work, they're slaves. They work 24/7. But for God, God said, Sabbath is a gift I am giving to everybody, even those who are most likely to be worked to death. Right? So we do it as a community. And everybody's included, from the wealthiest and most privileged to the most marginalized and the most oppressed. That's Sabbath. It's this beautiful thing, right, for the Jewish people. But is it for us? For those of us that don't have a Jewish background and want to follow Jesus, what could Sabbath look like in our lives? So let's take a look at what Jesus is saying here. First of all, in this part of the passage, they're just walking through the fields, and there's like picking grain. I've never picked raw wheat and eaten it. I don't know if that's good, but apparently the disciples liked it. And also, apparently, there are these, this is a religious sect that were very concerned about doing everything exactly right, the Sabbath. In fact, the Sabbath, I don't know if you know this, but among the Jewish people, the Sabbath was really controversial. And it was really important, because if you got the Sabbath wrong, there's even a passage that talks about, like, if you profane the Sabbath, like, that's like death penalty for you, right? So they took it very seriously. And they actually came up with 39 different categories of work. Like, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. And so apparently the disciples are transgressing one of these 39 categories. Like, you could only walk a certain distance. You know, like, this is rest, now it's work, you're in trouble. Seriously, there was a sort of limit on how far you could walk. You were allowed to eat on the Sabbath, but you weren't allowed to harvest on the Sabbath, right? You can't prepare dinner on the Sabbath. You got to do it the day before, right? So there's all these kind of nuances that are at issue here, right? And so it was actually okay for the disciples to be eating somebody else's grain. That was all right. But what wasn't okay was for them to be kind of working by getting their food ready on the Sabbath. And so they got in trouble. So that's kind of the issue it here. And this is the middle of a bunch of controversies in Mark. So what does Jesus say to them? What does Jesus always do? What do all Jewish rabbis do? They tell you a story, right? So Jesus tells them this story. He says, you know, there was once this famous Jewish king named David, and he was stuck in a hard place, and they needed some food. And so he went in, and he went to the temple, and he got this special bread called the showbread, which nobody but priests were supposed to eat. And he went, and he told the priest, he said, look, I'm in a hard place. Can you give me that bread? And the priest said, well, you are a famous king, so here's the bread. And they all ate it, and everything was fine. Right? So what Jesus is basically saying is, here's someone who is, it's okay for him to bend the law to this higher purpose, because David has the authority to do that. Right? That's the story he tells. So what's the payoff for Jesus? What's his response to the Pharisees saying, like, you have to do Sabbath just like this? Here's what he says. Really two things. First thing he says is, the Sabbath was made for humankind and not humankind for the Sabbath. So what's so important about that? Well, Jesus is actually making the point that it's not about the law. He's really getting to the heart of what is Sabbath about. Why did God make up this idea in the first place? It's for us. It's like his gift to us, is what Jesus is saying. It's not about us having to conform to this kind of pre-existing thing, and then it's a test to see if you're really good enough. No, that it's for you. It's a gift. That's Jesus' first point. And his second point there, so the Son of Man, when that's one of Jesus' famous titles for himself in Mark. So he's saying, me, the Son of Man, I'm Lord even of the Sabbath. There's a way in which, just like this famous King David could bend the rules when he needed to because he was in charge and he could make sense of things, so Jesus is important, even of all this religious background that we may have, even of all the ways we think we can do it right. Jesus is like, yeah, but I'm above that. And in this case, go ahead and pluck your grain and enjoy it. I hope you're not you don't have some allergy or something, you know? It was good. So that's Jesus' response. So what do we make of this then? Why does this matter for us? I think the first thing is just, and pretty straightforward, pretty simply, is that Jesus is actually saying for his followers implicitly here that, hey, Sabbath is still a gift for us. Right? This isn't something that we can say, well, the Jews used to like sacrifice animals, but we're not going to do that anymore. Jesus is actually saying here, like, there's a way that Sabbath is important for all of us. This is a gift for you. So what we want to get at in the next couple minutes is how can that really be a gift for us? The second thing is it tells us something about how God is, right? That God isn't the sort of God that likes to sort of make up rules just for its own sake, just because God can. God certainly could be that kind of God, but the point here is that God is, whenever God is kind of leading us, it's for you. God is light, and in God there's no darkness at all. Right? There's always something good for us in that. So God is good. Here's a gift. What does that look like for us? How do we receive that gift? All right, very simple. Don't work. Don't do it. Why is that a gift? I think we know this, but I want to say it to us because we're constantly being told to burn out. We're constantly being told to live a lifestyle that leads to stress. And instead, God says to each one of us here tonight, I did not make you to work all the time. It's not how I made you. I did not make you. My job, God's desire for you is not to stress you out and to burn you out. That is not God's intention for you. I've really enjoyed, since moving back to the Bay Area, kind of getting back in touch with people. And one of my close friends is a lawyer. She actually works at a nonprofit in the city. And you ask, how's your life going? How are things going? And she was telling us that work is hard because her boss recently said to her, and this is a quote, her boss told her, anyone working less than 60 to 80 hours a week is wasting their lives. You like that work environment, right? But I think that's just more explicit than it often is. I think there is that sense of, like, we have to be working almost all the time. And it's a prideful thing to say, like, yeah, I'm pretty busy, right? It's almost shameful to say, well, I'm not that busy. You know, like, hey, do you have time to meet up? Yeah, I kind of got nothing going. You're like, actually, forget it. You're kind of a loser, right? What's that about? You know, if you have that Google Calendar like mine there where it's totally empty, like, nobody likes you apparently, right? It's really sad. So there's this strong word to us in our culture that busy is holy, busy is valuable. But what God is actually saying is you aren't made just for that. God, it's not God's desire for any of us to be living in stress, living in burnout. And I would say that, you know, this community, that God is going to call us into some really good work for God coming forward, really good work for our community, really some ways we can really reach people. And that's one of the reasons I'm excited to be here. I feel like, man, we're going to do some good work together, but not at the expense of Sabbath. We cannot build a church. We could not build a community. We cannot build a work life that misses out on this gift of Sabbath, right? This, I'm so glad we're doing this sermon series this summer, because this is really the foundation of anything we might be doing together, both in your personal life as well as in a communal life. As a pastor, I am not interested in like getting all the volunteers I can to do all this stuff. I'm very interested in saying, like, are you living a Sabbath life? And out of that, do you have the grace to kind of take steps and do work that way? That's what I'm really excited about, because I want everyone here to be experiencing this good gift, which, as we've heard, is really for everybody. So how do we grab hold of this? It seems so simple, just don't work. But you can be guaranteed that when you fill in your calendar and say, this is Sabbath, you're going to get pushback. It always happens. I wanted to take a little sabbatical before I left Denver, and it kept shrinking and shrinking and shrinking until it went down to like 2 days. I was just like, I couldn't hold, it's like a wave. I just couldn't hold it back. It's so hard. And so I think I just want to take time. What God is saying to us is the gift of Sabbath is a little bit like a gift of say, like an Amazon gift card. You ever get one of those? $25 Amazon gift card. I've got an Amazon gift card right now in my backpack that haunts me. And I think I've made like 4 or 5 Amazon purchases without this card. And I keep forgetting, like, you know? And it's because somebody gave me the gift, but I have to take hold of it. I have to use it. And I think Sabbath is sort of the same way. We're no longer in a society where it'll just be St. Crispin's Day next week, and then nobody will work, and then we'll just kind of pray, and it will be our Sabbath. It's not going to happen, folks. We are all, as individuals, have to decide, this is my Sabbath. This is where it fits on my calendar. And then once that day comes, we have to unplug. And that's why that word unplug is becoming so popular, right? We have to do it on that time, or Sabbath will not happen for us. So it takes both. It's really a question of faith at that point. When things push back, both externally and internally, when I feel like I just can't take that off, can we say, this is God's gift to me, and no one will take it from me? I will hold on to that gift. I think that's God's call for us as individuals, but then as a community too. I think it's God's call for us to create a little Sabbath subculture. You know what I mean? Where we say, if somebody's maybe stressing themselves out and they're so busy and there's a way around it, we encourage them to receive that gift of Sabbath. And we talk about our Sabbaths. That's why I really appreciate Deanna coming up and talking about that, right? We need to create a little subculture among us. Some people aren't here at church today, and I think that's great. They're out on Sabbath. Like, they're more holy than we are, right? They're off doing Sabbath. Good job, right? So there's something about that that's really important, that taking that. And so the practical side of this is really just putting it on your calendar and not working. But what is work? This is where those rabbi fights kind of come into it, because, like, for me, gardening might be rest, but for you, gardening might be work, right? For you, running like a marathon might be rest, but for me, that's work, right? So it's really about discerning for ourselves, what is a productive activity, but it's draining, right? If it's a productive activity, but it's draining, that's work, and that's what you have to not do. For some of us, I think a big work tools these days are really technology. That's why it can be very prophetic and powerful to say, like, on my Sabbath, no technology. You know, for our kids hate us because Sabbath is no screen time. Right? This is more true than ever, but even in the 1950s, Abraham Heschel, he's a Jewish rabbi who wrote a beautiful book about the Sabbath. And he said, he's marching with Martin Luther King here, and he was already saying, the Sabbath is a day on which we stop worshiping the idols of technological civilization, a day on which we can use no money, a day of armistice in the economic struggle with our fellow men and the forces of nature. And is that not even more prophetic today? One of my favorite things about being up in, anybody know where that is? Good guess, not Muir Woods. Redwood Regional Park, we have a winner. Your prize is an Amazon gift card. which is probably expired. That is where I love to do Sabbath here. In fact, I've had one chance to have an office of my own, and I made these three places I take my Sabbath. I made those things and I put them up. And in fact, I prepared this sermon there. And so it's a really holy place for me. It's always part of my Sabbath. And one of the great things about Redwood Regional Park, which is only like 17 minutes away from here, is that you have no service up there. So you can't, it's an easy automatic choice to unplug. I think that's the call. The call is to not work, to figure out what we need to unplug from, and be experimental. Learn to do these things. This is what Jesus is really saying. The Sabbath is for you. The Sabbath is for you. And so it doesn't have to be exactly like everybody else, but it has to be a place of, look, I am not doing things that are productive but draining at this point. I'm just not. It's a new feeling. All right, so that's the don't work part. What do you do on the Sabbath then? For some of you maybe who have been around church, you've tried this, and this might be, but for some of us, this might be a really new thing. If you actually take an entire day and say, I'm not going to work, I'm going to rest, what would you even do? That's really challenging. And I'm not sure the passage directly tells us, but I do find it interesting that this is on the Sabbath and these disciples are going around and they were supposed to have made dinner the night before. Remember, that's the rule. But instead, they're kind of making dinner at the time. And that tells me something that, you know, in the book of Mark, the disciples are going around, they're super busy, they're working really hard with Jesus because they really want to see people connect with God in ways they never have. So it's probable that the day before they were just tired, they just didn't have time to do dinner. And there's something about being with Jesus, having Jesus in charge of their Sabbath, that Jesus is like, you know what, don't worry about that rule. I want to bless you with this food, right? So there's something about the role of Jesus in our Sabbath. I was really glad that Deanna talked about how just not working, that doesn't necessarily mean rest, right? Before I came here, our family took a six-day vacation in the Rockies. It was great. We saw all this stuff. We camped, we drove, we ferried kids around. They put up with us, we put up with them. It was a great moment in our family history, but let me tell you, that was not rest for any of us. You ever come home from a vacation and you need a break from your vacation? You know what I'm saying? And it's true, right? So vacations are not rest. Necessarily, they can be, but it's not the same thing. And like Dee said it so well, entertainment is not rest. It can be, but it's not the same thing. And so we now have a secular vocabulary which equates leisure time with entertainment and vacations. And so as Christians, when we hear like, hey, go do your Sabbath, you're like, great, I'm playing video games for like 16 hours. It's going to be awesome. And maybe it is awesome, and maybe you should do that sometimes, but that's not the same as having Jesus be the Lord of your Sabbath, right? I think there's a way in which in Sabbath, Jesus should be and can be and wants to be and invites you to be the convener of your Sabbath, the host of your Sabbath, right? The center of your Sabbath. That's what Jesus is really looking for. So maybe the best way to put it is actually to say what Jesus wants from you on your Sabbath is not just rest, but Jesus on your Sabbath wants to give you what we might call soul rest, right? It's soul rest. That's something that he gives to us as a gift. How can you know when you're experiencing soul rest? All I can do is tell my own story, how I know it, and so I'd love for you guys to talk more with each other about that. But for me, I really find that soul rest is happening when I'm really connecting with God. And when I give God enough time for God to actually come through. I'm a person that's experienced a lot of doubt in my life. I think that's a part of faith, actually. If you're a thinking person who lives in Berkeley, you're going to have doubt. That's just the way it is. There are real questions we have about faith. I think that's really valid. However, I've also noticed that some of the times when I'm sort of doubting, like, where is God? Sometimes that's because I haven't shown up in front of God in weeks, right? I'm like, I don't sense God at all. And God's like, hello, McFly. You know, like, I just haven't given. It's a little bit like, you know, there are radio signals and all kinds of signals in the air around us all the time, right? Those are there, whether we tune in or not. And a Sabbath, soul rest, is a time to actually tune in to the fact that God is present to us. You know, and some of us have these blessed times in life where we're tracking with God's presence all the time. You're emailing, you're writing, you're talking to people, you're tracking God's presence. But for most of us, Sabbath is a time to kind of reconnect with those Holy Spirit frequencies, you know? And so for me, sometimes I have to ask the question, is my doubt really, are these legitimate questions, or is this just because I'm not showing up? And so soul rest is a time to reconnect with God and to realize God is with me and to even be able to bring that into our daily lives. So I think soul rest, one of the other things that happens in soul rest is it just allows love to come up into your soul. I don't know about you, but sort of as a very selfish introvert, when I don't have Sabbath, I'm just a big jerk. I mean, I'm always a big jerk, but less, even more so, right? It's I just find that when I don't have that Sabbath where God pours his love into me, I got nothing. It's just about me, you know? And so Sabbath is a place for me to say, oh, I do want to love my neighbor as myself, and I can do it. You know, so having that soul rest where God pours God's love into me and God pours God's love for other people in, I just find I can do it all of a sudden, right? And so I would say that soul rest is the kind of thing that really replenishes your energy for your life's calling, right? What's all of our life's calling? Love God and love your neighbor. We all know that. We all have the same calling. Looks really different. For some of us, that's in our workplace. For some of us, God has called us to work 60 hours a week in a certain thing. And that's how we love God and our neighbor. And your Sabbath is that place that God replenishes your desire to do that. Does that make sense? So if you get done with a Sabbath and you've experienced soul rest, you're like, I'm ready to go back out into it. And then that's the rhythm. That's the work and the Sabbath kind of rhythm that can really be such a blessing to us. So as we end here, really the practical thing is really just in the week to come, get out your blank calendar, whether that's on paper, or whether that's in your head, or whether that's on your phone, and ask yourself, when is your Sabbath going to be? And then ask yourself, what are you going to do on your Sabbath? For me, there are ingredients in my Sabbath. The ingredients almost always are some form of really extended prayer. And extended for you might be 10 minutes. That's great. We all have a certain prayer appetite. I think that makes sense. And maybe it's trying a few things, like Pastor Rena talked about last week. Maybe you'll spend some time just in silence. Maybe you'll have some time to just pour out your heart to God, and then you'll be like, okay, that's it. I still have 7 hours and 42 minutes in my Sabbath. What do I do now? And so then maybe you have some some written prayers you kind of go through, right? And maybe you just have some times of silence. For me, I almost always do exercise on my Sabbath. There's a way in which that kind of, and I know God is there, but I'm not thinking about God every second. There's even a time when sometimes just restful entertainment is there. I had this great Sabbath again in Colorado where I went up, and this is embarrassing, but I made this long playlist of bad 80s hits. And I went up and I sat in the mountains and I had this big Sabbath day, and part of my day was to just sit there for a couple hours and groove. And I think God was in that. You know what I'm saying? So I think that was all with Jesus being the center of my Sabbath on that day. It was a real blessing. So my encouragement to you, maybe tonight, maybe as we finish out the service, maybe you get out your calendar and you say, what's Sabbath going to look like for me this week? And if that's hard for you to identify that day, and if it's hard for you to hold to that, I would really encourage you to reach out to somebody else in this community and talk about that. Right? What are the things that are keeping us from being able to do that? Why is it so hard to connect? And to hear about other people's Sabbath rhythms. And together, what I really believe is that God will be building in us a community, just the way he did with the Jews so many years ago. His own people that receive that gift of Sabbath, and then that overflows into a kind of work that's a blessing to the world. And it's life-giving to us as well. Amen.